because fundamentally we disagree with the current REGO certification approach. But in the world of renewable power, you can take that renewable certificate that maybe was generated from solar in the middle of summer, and you can take that certificate, hold on to it till the middle of winter when it's not even sunny outside, and then you can allocate it to a piece of power that was generated from coal or gas, and you can claim that that's renewable. The renewable system we have at the moment, that is within the parameters of what you're allowed to do. At Good Energy, we say, well, you might be allowed to do it, but it's still not the right thing to do, and it's not incentivizing the right level of new build renewables to create renewables at those difficult times at 5 o'clock on a winter's evening when it's dark and not windy. So we need to change the system and change when those certificates and power flows are linked up and when they're given to customers.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back for another installment of Transmission. In today's episode, guest host Ed Porter is joined by Good Energy's Director of Sales and Origination, Tom Parsons. Over the conversation, they discuss how customers can use time-matched certifications to better take control of their carbon emissions. As always, if you are enjoying the podcast, please consider giving it a like and subscribe. It really helps us to reach a wider audience. And with that, let's jump in.
Hello and welcome to Transmission. I'm guest host Ed Porter, and today we've been joined by Tom Parsons from Good Energy. Welcome, Tom.
Thank you, Ed. Good to see you.
It's great to have you on. And your role title, right? So you're Director of Sales and Origination. I would love to start off by asking, because I've been asked this 1,000 times, what does origination mean?
It's a great first question. And when I interviewed for this role, that was the first thing I had to look up, is what exactly was an originator and what was I supposed to be doing in the job. But quite simply, it's the sourcing of renewable power across the UK. So there's literally tens of thousands of independent renewable generators across the UK, all the way from offshore wind farms down to a farmer with some solar panels on their roof. And you need people that can go out, understand the mechanisms for selling that power, putting it onto the grid and getting it to homes. And that's what originators do.
Okay, so a whole lot of hustle going on, making sure you're getting out, seeing people, getting those contracts signed, and people are getting good value for what they're generating, right?
Yeah, and actually a load of those are farmers. So the farming community has been great for renewable generation in the UK, everything from solar panels to putting wind turbines on their land and then building biogeneration as well, you know, using the manure to create AD. It's absolutely fantastic.
Oh, and like we're T-minus 30 seconds into a podcast, and I can sense like a rabbit hole coming, because I would love to ask the question around like putting solar panels on less good quality farmland and kind of where your views are on that. But maybe we can come back to that. Let's kind of just stay at the high level though to begin with. So just in terms of who Good Energy are and what the mission is, I would love to hear your take.
Sure. So, I mean, our mission hasn't changed in 24 years. It's actually our 25th birthday next year. So watch out for the celebrations on that. But 24 years ago, we were set up with a really straightforward mission, which was to help combat catastrophic climate change. And that hasn't changed since then. How we get to that right now, our mission is, the way we reach that mission is to help 1 million homes and businesses in the UK decarbonize. And that's everything from sourcing renewable power for them to helping them with sort of energy services and the installation of assets that help them decarbonize, help them get off gas and utilize that renewable power.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And there's like within that, right? So there's a real kind of physical, this is a real thing you can install on your site and you're going to get value out of it, to the kind of almost financial or certificate based thing, which is you're going to connect to the grid and the certificate's going to do some of the heavy lifting for you. And I think we're going to come onto that in a little bit more detail. So I'm excited to get into that, but maybe just going back a step. So what is it that you do within Good Energy?
Yeah, so my teams are responsible for sourcing all of that great renewable power. So we've got about 2,500 independent generators across the UK. And that really is the foundation of Good Energy's business, is those renewable generators. And when I talk about the 2,500, that's businesses that are selling their power to us. As I said, lots of farmers earlier, there's some community energy schemes in there as well and things like that. But actually on top of that, we've got around 175,000 feed-in tariff customers. And they're small generators, they're households like this one with solar panels on the roof that are then exporting that power to the grid. So we've actually got a huge amount of customers with feed-in tariff. We're the second largest provider of feed-in tariff services in the UK. So we've really got that scale. So that's the first part of my job, sourcing all that great renewable power. And then the second part is then, you know, finding the customers that want to buy that power, that really care about the provenance of that power. And you mentioned earlier that question around certification and the actual power flows themselves. And the difference about Good Energy from pretty much every other supplier in the UK is that we keep the power and the certificates together, which means if a supply customer wants to take the power from us, they know that the certificate, the Renewable Energy Guarantee of Origin, the REGO, has traveled with that power all the way along, and they can go back and find the provenance of the site that generated, whether it's a farmer or whether it's a little hydro site at the base of Snowdon. So that's the other side of what I do, is finding those import customers. And that could be domestic. So we've got 55,000 of those on supply with us at the moment, or it could be business. And we've got 5,500 business customers on supply with us at the moment. So you've got that natural balance at Good Energy of great renewable power coming on one side, and then customers that want that provenance and want to be able to evidence their renewable power on the other side. But then what we found recently over the course of the last 2-3 years is those customers that are buying the renewable power from us, we've got great relationship with them, great brand trust. I think we're at 4.7 on Trustpilot now as a pretty solid indicator. But they're saying, right, well, we love the power, but what more can you do for us? You know, that's step one on our decarbonization journey, or step 2, 3, however they position it. What else can you do for us? So then we moved into energy services to say, right, we're going to help you decarbonize further with the actual installation of assets, whether that's solar panels on the roof, whether it's heat pumps in the houses to get them off gas. And so we're creating quite the ecosystem to help those customers decarbonize, both across the business side of things and the domestic side of things.
Okay. And you mentioned two things in there that I think we should probably have a refresher on: a feed-in tariff and a REGO. Would you mind just kind of giving us the high level view of what both of those two things are? And maybe, do you get a REGO with a feed-in tariff?
That's a brilliant question. Actually, you're guessing about our product development process there, which is quite exciting. So the feed-in tariff is a scheme that was set up, actually Good Energy helped set it up, because we recognised that small generators weren't able to sell their renewable power onto the grid. There was no incentive for them to be able to do it. There was no way they could get paid for putting it onto the grid. So very few people were building. So we worked with the various industry bodies to create a precursor to the FIT scheme, the feed-in tariff scheme. That worked. And what it effectively means is customers get paid a generation payment. So every kilowatt hour they generate, they get paid a fixed payment for the duration of the scheme. And then for every unit they export as well, they get paid a separate payment for that. And those at the time were reasonably generous. So they were a good incentive. And what that meant is the feed-in tariff scheme meant a lot of small-scale generators cropped up, and they were able to build solar on their roofs and export back to the grid.
Okay.
So that's the feed-in tariff. That scheme is now closed. That's been replaced by the Smart Export Guarantee, and we can touch on that a little bit more later on. But in terms of those renewable energy guarantees of origins, that's effectively just a receipt that comes with every megawatt hour of renewable power that's generated in the UK. So if a hydro site on Snowdon generates a megawatt hour of power, there's a REGO, a certificate that is attributed to that. That's all managed centrally. And that effectively guarantees that power is renewable. It's the audit trail that goes through the process. And you can separate the power and the REGOs and sell them separately from each other. Good Energy doesn't think that's the right thing to do. And that's what I was touching on earlier around keeping the two together, just to evidence that provenance and keep the process whole.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. And so that piece around feed-in tariff. So I love the idea of kind of connecting supply generation and demand. If you're kind of if you're generating with a feed-in tariff, like, do you get a REGO, or is that more for sort of the bigger projects?
So interestingly, you are entitled to claim a REGO on any feed-in tariff generation. It's a small amount. So you know, a typical household would generate maybe 1-1.5 REGOs per year, but there is a value on those REGO certificates. But at the moment, there is no market mechanism for the household to claim that REGO, so effectively to generate the ID for it, and there's no process in the industry to support and facilitate that. So at Good Energy, we're actually looking at ways at the moment that we can do that, because that's an extra 10, 15, 20 pounds that would go back into the householders and into the renewable generators.
Mm-hmm. And that's been something of a ride, right? So REGOs have kind of, if you go back 5 years, were worth maybe, I'm going to say, 20 to 40p. But a REGO nowadays is a very different ballpark, right?
Yeah, the market's shifted massively, and that comes with some significant benefits. So at 20 pence a REGO, the problem is it's not a lot of money for any generator. So it doesn't necessarily incentivize new generation, and it doesn't help finance new projects. Once you start getting above the £10 a REGO mark, the feedback from our customers is that then does incentivize new projects. That helps you when you do the maths on whether you should invest in building new generation. That £10 per megawatt hour additional top up from the REGO, well, we're at 14 now, and actually some have traded at sort of 20, 24 over the course of the last couple of weeks. That really does help incentivize new build generation. So We're seeing some quite exciting things in the marketplace at the moment, which I think is broadly good news for renewables in the UK.
Yeah. And on that sort of some trading at 20, some trading at 24, does that mean that there's sort of different quality of REGO? Can you get one that's like a grade A, a grade B? Like, why are they different value?
So historically, we have seen quite a separation between different types of REGOs, and that depends on the source of the power ultimately. So we see various terms in the industry, things like deep green, which applies to your hydro, your solar and your wind. And then something like biomass would come out as not deep green, still renewable certificated, but not the same deep level. And we would have seen a lower premium, a lower REGO price paid for that, for those biomass. But they're in such short supply at the moment. So demand is increasing and supply has actually decreased, that we're seeing those prices actually levelize out now. Almost everybody's desperate to get their hands on something. So the prices tend to stabilize across the piece.
Yeah. Okay. And this, and you've kind of not only got sort of the origin being different by REGO, but then you've also got the other part of this, which is when was your generation and when is your demand, and making sure that they match. And the kind of traditionally the industry has very much been trying to match within year, but you're sort of trying to push the boundary of that, right? And this is building on a great podcast we did with Granular probably about 3 weeks ago now, that's kind of talking about perhaps matching REGOs on a more like half hour by half hour basis.
That's right. So we've launched a product with Granular called Hourly Matching. And that means that all of our business customers in the UK can see on an hour by hour basis where their renewable power is coming from. And we launched that because fundamentally we disagree with the current REGO certification approach. And I like the tomato analogy, right, with organic tomatoes. So let me take you that through and see if it lands. So imagine you go to the shops, you go to Waitrose and you buy organic tomatoes and you pay, I don't know, £5 for those organic tomatoes. There's a premium because they're organic, they're from Waitrose. You take your receipt and you take your tomatoes home and then you eat those tomatoes, but you hold on to the receipt. Imagine 6 months later you go to Tesco's and buy the cheapest tomato they've got, not organic, and you take them home, and then you sell those tomatoes with the Waitrose receipt to your neighbour as organic. Now, your neighbour would quite quickly say, these aren't organic, they've got a Tesco label on, it doesn't match up with Waitrose, this is absolute nonsense. And it wouldn't be appropriate, he would send you back with them. But in the world of renewable power, you can take that renewable certificate that maybe was generated from solar in the middle of summer, and you can take that certificate, hold on to it till the middle of winter when it's not even sunny outside, and then you can allocate it to a piece of power that was generated from coal or gas, and you can claim that that's renewable. So in the tomato analogy, unacceptable, but the renewable system we have at the moment, that is within the parameters of what you're allowed to do. At Good Energy, we say, well, you might be allowed to do it, but it's still not the right thing to do, and it's not incentivizing the right level of new build renewables to create renewables at those difficult times at 5 o'clock on a winter's evening when it's dark and not windy. So we need to change the system and change when those certificates and power flows are linked up and when they're given to customers.
Yeah, no, it makes sense, the tomato analogy. I think the thing that I would challenge on here is that actually, like, how affordable is it for everyone to have a Waitrose organic tomato? You know, every time I go, go and buy a bag of new cherry tomatoes, I might have to remortgage my house to pick them up. So if you're someone who wants to do the right thing, you want to have time matched REGOs, that sounds like a really good solution to making sure your REGOs really have that provenance. But how do I do that and make sure that my business is viable?
I think there's two elements on this one. Now, number one is what we fundamentally need to do with the energy market in the UK is separate gas prices from renewable prices, because at the moment when gas prices spike, renewable prices are traded on the same wholesale market, they jump as well. So actually your problem there around premium renewable power and let's call it dirty bad gas power, they're the same price, so there is no premium on that. So we need to separate one from the other. And there are various mechanisms and schemes, like community power schemes, that enable that sort of break in the linkage to happen. And Ofgem and various bodies are looking at other ways of separating out the two. So I don't think you necessarily have a premium there on it. And then when we look at the Good Energy product, so the cost for the first year for all of our customers is nothing. So we're 100% subsidizing it, because what I want to do is give everyone the opportunity to see and feel what it looks like, and then to get the data and be able to make decisions off the back of it. So have that true transparent picture, and then they can focus their investment decisions on the true decarbonization activities they need to do, rather than just ones that are born out of bad information. But then for the second year and beyond, yes, there is a price, but you're talking tens of pence per megawatt hour. So negligible prices for corporations to be able to give them real direction in terms of where to focus their investment.
Okay.
And the way I look at it is they're actually saving there's a opportunity cost that they're saving here, because at the moment they're spending lots of money on decarbonisation activities that may not be pointing in the right direction. What hourly matching enables them to do is then refocus that expenditure on things that will actually make a material difference both to the corporation and to UK PLC as a whole and our broader carbon footprint.
Okay. So there are two really interesting parts of that. So one is kind of the section where you're sort of talking about actually let them get on and do the decarbonisation activities they really want to do. And for me, that's kind of crying out to like the physical, what can you install on your site type thing. And let's come to that, because I think that's super interesting. But the other part I just wanted to flag up very quickly is just around the economics of this thing. So you mentioned sort of 10 pence per megawatt hour. And for people kind of who don't deal in like pounds per megawatt hour for wholesale power prices, a standard wholesale power price might be, say, £100 per megawatt hour. And so Tom's saying, okay, we're talking like, this is easy maths for me. It's like 0.1 to 0.2% of the wholesale price might be going on making sure you've got a match Rego. Have I got that right?
Absolutely. And of course, a customer's bill isn't just a wholesale price. So when you actually look at the cost on a bill, you're talking less than that 0.1% bill increase.
Okay. So then the kind of carry on question, right, which is if the benefit or if the cost to the consumer is only kind of 0.1 pound per megawatt hour or 10 pence per megawatt hour, then that is effectively something that you are taking from the customer to give to the generator. And you're saying to the generator, hey, I think that what you're doing is super valuable. You're not just generating at the same time as all the solar sites, and you're not just generating at the same time as all the wind sites, but you're generating on a cold, still winter's evening when everyone's turning on their power. And the Rego analogy is great, right? Because you buy Regos at £20 and it gives people the confidence to go and invest in things that are really useful. And as you said, once you get to £10 a Rego, people go, oh, you know what, this works for me. I can take this decision. At 10 pence per megawatt hour, it feels like that's almost too low to kind of incentivize, like say a battery to kind of make an investment decision. So do you think that 10 pence will go up in the future and sort of incentivize more build? Or is there some sort of cumulative effect that will go on here and kind of make a better business case for something like storage that might shift between half hour to half hour?
For me, it's a rebalancing of the overall cost. So actually the pence per megawatt hour we're talking about there is actually the administration cost, really. It's the cost of the platform and doing that allocation and the balancing. What that balancing allows us to do is to say, right, well, perhaps solar Regos, and we're going to see more and more solar coming onto the UK grid, over the next decade. Maybe they're worth £9, maybe they're worth £10. The average at the moment is, let's say, 14, and solar Regos are worth less because they're only covering that peak period. But perhaps a biogeneration, so anaerobic digestion Rego, is worth £25. Because it's base load and it consistently performs throughout the day and throughout the night based on the manure or waste crops that go into it. So actually it's about rebalancing where those Rego payments get made. And when you move down into the more granular certification, so you can actually say hour by hour, instead of saying solar's worth X and anaerobic digestion is worth Y, you say, well, if it was generated in the middle of the day in summer, it's worth really not a huge amount, but that's fine because there's the investment case for solar is actually still pretty strong even without these Regos. But if it's a Rego that's generated 5 o'clock on a dark winter's evening, that Rego could be worth £500, £750. So it's that reallocation of value within the existing system that happens. So there shouldn't actually be an additional cost on customers. They can just focus their finances in the right areas.
Okay, that makes sense to me. And the reason why that question comes up is because I know a lot of people listening to this will be people who are investing in battery fleets or have battery fleets. And so, they're looking at, okay, where can I get additional revenue from? And this sounds like something that could be really valuable for their site. So as that scheme takes off and you start to see volume coming through it, I'm sure you'll get lots of battery operators and owners who'd be very interested to find out more. Can I just ask one more about kind of the matching of Regos? So what does the volume look like today? How many people do this? Is it kind of, are we talking about 0.01% of the market, or is this something that's actually growing really quickly?
So when you say how many people, do you mean what, which suppliers are out there doing this in the marketplace?
So actually, let's go for consumers, let's go for generators. How many people are signed up to the scheme?
So from a consumer side of things, it's all of our business customers. So we're putting them on the platform for free. So you're talking about a quarter of a terawatt of power there that goes onto it. And of course, then that's matched off by another quarter of a terawatt of power of generators. But actually, on top of that, we're also doing it at a good energy level. So, you know, we're about a half a terawatt hour business on the import and the export side of things. So although we don't have the half hourly data for all of our SME customers or our domestic customers, because it doesn't exist at the moment for all of them, you can do the total shape, which we do. Mm-hmm. We put into the platform, and then we do the total shape of our renewable generation. And collectively, we can say, right, these portfolios were at 93% matched on an hour by hour basis. Still 100% matched over the year, but 93% matched on an hour by hour basis, which is, you know, right at the top of capability of any supplier in the UK. In fact, it's higher than any other supplier, as far as I can tell, in the UK. So yeah, we've got about half a terawatt of power on our books that are participating in this at the moment that can see their score. And then when we look worldwide, there's the usual sort of tech players that are already doing it on a individual company level. So Google are pushing hard for it, Microsoft are pushing hard for it, and a number of others as well. But one of the really important things for me around this, and the reason we're doing it for every single one of our customers, is we don't just want to cherry pick, because what you could find doing, and actually what I think we'll probably see from some of our competitors going forward, is they'll say, okay, there is value in this product. Consumers in the marketplace want to pay a premium for it. They want to see this level of data. So maybe they'll sell a contract to Microsoft that gives them that hourly matching, but the other 70% of their customers, they don't give it to. And actually those 70% then suddenly get worse power, because all the good stuff's being reserved for Microsoft on an hour by hour basis. So you don't actually help the UK, the system or your contribution as a company to it. You just cherry pick, move things around, and create a premium product that you can sell to somebody who's trying to invest in it.
Yeah. It's testament to people like Microsoft and Google that they have kind of innovated in this and pushed for it, and suppliers like yourself that are pushing for it. It does move the needle. But I totally see what you're saying around, actually, if you take all of your sort of balanced power and then chuck it all over to one side of your portfolio, then you're just kind of fudging the other numbers, it seems. So the whole portfolio sort of approach seems like the only way to go. Now, to people outside of kind of the energy space, you said shape and demand shape and generation shape, and it would just be great to get like just a couple of lines on what shape is and why, like, when you say you're matching shape, what does that mean?
This, it's quite, just simply, it means a curve. So how much electricity does an organization or an individual home need on an hour by hour basis? And you'll typically see a sort of a bell shaped curve throughout the day for most organizations and for most households. And that's because at night a business is turned off, so we've got very little electricity consumption. And likewise, a household at nighttime, everything's turned off and everybody wakes up in the morning, microwave goes on, kettle goes on, maybe the television goes on a weekend, and you start to see that consumption increase. So it's just making sure that for each of those periods, there is an equivalent amount of generation. So the generator shape is doing exactly the same as the household or business.
Okay. All right. That's clear. And I think we've talked a lot about kind of the matching of certificates and making sure that businesses can kind of buy something that really kind of allows them to say to themselves or to their board or to whoever, actually, we are genuinely renewable because we've matched our shape and we've bought certificates that work on a half hour by half hour basis. If we then talk about the physical side of this, so alongside there being solar on farmers' fields and there being AD plants all over the country, we also have this kind of new sort of option that's available for businesses, which might be bringing generation onto their own site and starting to really manage their own energy needs. Like, what does the trend look like here? And what are customers asking for?
Absolutely. I mean, when we look at the options customers have in terms of decarbonizing their portfolios, the first one is, of course, consume less. And lots of them are doing that and consume, you know, more wisely. The second one is either to build your own renewable assets or to take renewable supply, or actually probably a mix of both of those. So we are seeing an increase in customers, quite a big increase, especially among the commercial sector, that's saying, right, I want to put renewable generation onto my assets. And solar works quite well for a lot of commercial organizations because their employees are arriving at 8 a.m. in the morning, they're going home at 6 p.m. in the evening, which happens to be, you know, on a certain time of the year is when the sun rises and the sun sets, you know, not quite right now when we're in winter, but those two shapes I was talking about earlier actually match quite nicely. So yeah, significant demand there. I've seen a little bit of a lag, really. So wholesale prices peaked in October last year. So that's when prices were getting really expensive. We spoke about £100 a megawatt hour earlier. We saw prices up to £800 a megawatt hour during October last year. And a lot of businesses were, you know, they had to sign electricity contracts because they needed power coming in. So they've been suffering from some pretty horrible build, you know, caused by the invasion of Russia and Ukraine and a number of other factors. But they've suffered through those bills and had to pay them. And what that's meant is as they go through their budget cycles now and as they go through their sign-off processes, they're saying, right, we need more resilience against getting hit by these bills going forwards. So now we're seeing as they get into the end of the current financial year or the beginning of the next one, they're saying, right, now we have signed off this budget for £500,000 to invest in solar on our warehouse roof. Now we just need to go out and find a provider that can give us that. And then any power we're exporting, we want to know what the fixed rate is going to look like for that. So it helps with the business case and then gives us that power cost resilience for the next 10, 20, 25 years.
And now, like from my view, I see the business case of putting solar onto those sites is generally a reasonably strong business case. But from you, from your point of view as a supplier, can you tell me a little bit about like how the demand shape is perhaps evolving? We're back to shape again, and like why that might be a difficult thing for you.
We have to do a lot more balancing now. So as more and more solar is put onto the grid, that means we end up with lots of renewable power in the middle of the day. So we have to make sure that aligns to our import customers as well. And then where it doesn't, we have to trade that export power, which can potentially be worth less because there's so much on the grid at those times. So it does mean we have to be smart as an organization, but we're sat on both sides of the coin here. So we're buying renewable power on one side, we're selling it on the other, and in the middle we do all these balancing services. So we've got that great capability to work out how much power is worth at different times of the day and put that into our pricing models so that we make sure we're paying a fair price to generators and consumers are getting, a well-balanced price off the back of it. And when we talk about, generators and consumers, as you say, that could be the same organization. That can be a warehouse with solar on the roof. At 6 in the morning they're a consumer, and at 11 a.m. in the morning they're a generator, and it's just balancing the two for them and making sure that overall their costs are as good as possible.
Okay. And do you see many people, so a lot of people I think are looking at solar on rooftops, right? That seems like a bit of a slam dunk, but do you see many people kind of going the step further? So it's kind of, I want to put solar on my rooftop, but I also realize that in winter, the sun goes down at 4 o'clock and I've got to, and the factory runs on until 6. And so I know I've got this 2 hours of additional demand that I need to meet. And I would love to meet more of it with kind of my own generation on site. Do you see people starting to look at, okay, I've got the solar, I want to stick on a battery as well, and I want to make sure that I can meet that 4 to 6 from my sort of battery on site? Or do you think that maybe they should look at actually just get a matched Rego and get it from grid? That's a much easier way of solving the problem.
Yeah, we've got two parts of this, I think. So on a commercial side of things, yes, they're asking those questions and saying, right, what can I do about batteries for those shoulder hours when it's not sunny and we're still consuming? But at the moment, batteries for a warehouse, tend to be higher, well, they are higher consuming customers. A battery won't cover you for 2 hours unless you stick lots and lots of them in, and then you're getting up into the hundreds of thousands of pounds, and the payback period, your return on your investment, suddenly starts to go from 3 or 4 years just for your solar up to 10, 12 years when you stick enough batteries on to cover it. So you're right that actually the better solution there is to say, right, well, is there a grid level solution here, which there is. And, that's what Good Energy does. It says you do the cost effective renewable generation for yourselves when you can, which at the moment is solar. Payback period is great. And when you can't do that, we will find you renewable power from across the UK that means across your 24 hour operating cycle, you're getting renewable power for as much of that as possible. But on the flip side, other customer base, domestic customers, we're seeing 80 to 90% of them taking batteries at the same time as solar. So even though, again, the payback period for a domestic customer does increase with the battery, they see more value in it because it actually gives them resilience as well. So yes, it helps them get renewable power in the shoulder hours. But actually, when we saw the storms roll through last week and cause quite a lot of devastation on the south coast of England, tens of thousands of homes without power. Anyone that had a Tesla Powerwall battery installed was still able to run all their electrical assets in the house. And we had, we've installed, I think, 300-400 of those so far. And it's quite an active community. And many of them are quite quick to come back to us and say, my house is the only one on the street that's still got power because the broader power's down. And there is devastation going around, but they're feeling quite smug that they made a choice that gave them that resilience. And I think we'll carry on seeing that trend going forwards.
Yeah, I think that for me, it's a really fascinating part of the energy sector, right? So someone might say, oh, look, it doesn't really make sense for people to go and deploy batteries on walls in people's homes. It's so difficult to get the contracts in place, put it in place, recoup the money from doing it. You have to roll out so much volume. It's so hard. But on the flip side of this, then whilst it might be quite difficult for like a big corporate to put lots of money into it, you like it's almost like the bank of mum and dad, right? You've kind of got this big pot of money and grid connections in terms of EV charging points and your Tesla that sits outside, maybe your battery that you've got at home as well. And actually, there's a big pot of grid connections and money and willing people to try and sort of make a change on a personal level, right? And so we kind of maybe sit back and we think about, oh, the corporates are doing this, but actually there might be a bit of a revolution going on within homes in the UK. So I'm kind of fascinated to hear that you're also working so much on that side of things. And I know we also wanted to kind of cover the solar savings side of things. So if you are someone who's taken the plunge and bank of mum and dad is kind of, you know, you've decided this is where I'm going to stick my money. I've got some solar panels, but you can't use it all. Like, how does that work?
I'm just thinking back to your bank of mum and dad. I'm trying to work out how I can get my parents to pay additional assets in the house at the moment. So I'd be happy to take another battery. I've got the EV on the drive at the moment. So we launched our solar savings product only a matter of months ago now. And the purpose of that product is, again, it's innovation within quite a technical, complex area of the industry and quite a stagnant area. So the feed-in tariff scheme we spoke about earlier is closed. There's not much innovation going on it. Customers are getting paid a set amount for their generation and then a set amount for their export. The export rate is sort of 6 to 7 pence. And we looked at wholesale prices and we said, well, 6 to 7 pence doesn't seem very fair as an export rate anymore. Actually, it should be 15 to 20 pence. So we wanted to create a mechanism where those feed-in tariff customers could actually get access to much higher wholesale prices without creating any risk to their existing feed-in tariff contract, because those are quite valuable and, you know, they go on for sort of 20, 25 years. So there's two things we've done. So first of all is putting all of our feed-in tariff customers onto smart export. So the feed-in tariff scheme, when it was set up, there was an estimation within the industry that said, we're going to assume 50% of your generation is exported. So half of what you generate will come out to the market and we will pay you 7 pence for that 50%. And then, so we did some analysis at Good Energy and we realized actually people exported on average about 60%. So they're getting shortchanged for effectively what they're getting paid. So we flipped all of those customers with smart meters, because you need that data, onto smart export. And that means they're getting a 20% increase in their payments. Now, for a customer, an individual customer, that's about £20 a year. But there's literally nothing they need to do to enable that. We've done it so far. We've done it for about 54,000 customers now have been moved over onto that product. So you're talking quite a lot of extra value. And you think sort of, yeah, that £20 across 54,000 customers. But then we move into the really exciting things, moving beyond just that smart export and that sort of technical change onto our solar savings product. And we designed this product to cover both those feed-in tariff customers, but also actually customers that miss the feed-in tariff because it's closed and technically fall under the smart export guarantee scheme at the moment. So for feed-in tariff customers, we move them off of that 6-7 pence rate. It varies a bit depending on when they signed up and what inflation is. And we've put them onto a 15 pence a kilowatt hour export rate. So that means they're getting paid over double for what they were previously. And that stacks up to about £100 per customer across the year. So now we're starting to get into numbers that are actually reasonably material for a customer. And then those customers that installed their solar, and it predominantly is always solar, so they've installed their solar after the FIT scheme closed. Once the solar installation is done, you're not getting paid anything. There's no guaranteed mechanism for you to get paid for that. You have to go to a supplier and agree a smart export guarantee rate or an equivalent rate. And the average in the UK is about five pence a kilowatt hour, so even lower than that FIT payment I was talking about earlier. But again, we flip them onto a 15 pence a kilowatt hour. Anyone that signs up with us, anyone that actually installs through Good Energy, so has the solar panels installed through our team and then a battery put in as well, we pay out 20 pence a kilowatt hour. So that adds up to about £100 increase per year per customer for that product as well. And when you start to stack that up across tens of thousands of customers across the industry, then you're literally creating sort of millions of pounds of additional value and incentives for customers to go out and install renewables on their households. And there's an interesting nuance in our marketplace of particularly around the feed-in tariff scheme. So a lot of the rooftops were actually leased out. So you'd almost have a rent-a-roof scheme where, as a household like me, a company would say, we want to put panels on your roof. You consume from the panels in the day, and anything that's exported, we as the company own. And it was quite attractive for individuals to do that. And so you've got lots of portfolios of households, 10, 15,000 sites all stacked up under the same, generally an investment group, whether that's a pension company or a fund manager, et cetera. And so when you start to say, well, one of these funds has got 15,000 rooftop sites, you can see that by moving over onto a solar savings type product, they're actually getting about £1 million extra per year by doing very little, just enabling good energy to move things around in the background for them and put them on the most attractive rate. And when you're an investor with a portfolio and everything's about how much money you're making, suddenly that creates a huge amount more value for those investors.
Mm-hmm. This space is kind of incredible to me, right? We go from the sort of early feed-in tariff rates and the sort of interesting business models that you have, like renting a rooftop type thing, and then bundling that all together for sort of large investment funds, through to, okay, we're now starting to get much more solar online, and we now have businesses like Microsoft and Google that want to have half hour by half hour balanced REGOs to make sure that they're getting sort of a full green supply. And we've also, at the same time, we've got all these businesses that are going, hey, with the invasion of Ukraine by Russia last year, I don't want to be paying £700 per megawatt hour. I actually want to take some of this back, and I just want to just have solar resilience and maybe battery resilience on my home. The space seems to be changing so fast, and it's a sort of very exciting place to be. But I am sure that if we kind of go forward 10 years and look back on where we are now, things are going to be very different again. So a huge amount of change. Within the podcast, we like to wrap up with two key questions. And so the two key questions would be, the first one would be, is there anything that you'd like to plug?
The big one for me is good energy really is that generator's best friend. We've been doing it for very close to 25 years now. We enabled the mechanism for generators get paid. We've got so many great customers, and we do a series on YouTube called Meet the Generator, and that gives some of our generators that we're happy to talk about good energy and what we do with them. We've just got so many great generators, so many great brand ambassadors across domestic and business, that I think it's something that I'd encourage anyone that is generating to take a look at good energy, see if we align to the ideals, because as you say, they've often built the assets for a financial return, which we can do, but actually for a, you know, how does this help the planet return, and good energy is right at the forefront of that. So yeah, we find a lot of customers aligned to those brands and want to be a part of our story going forwards.
Okay, I love it. And the second part of the ending would be around your contrarian view. So is there something that you believe that a lot of the industry doesn't?
It certainly was a contrarian view. I think actually the industry is catching up. So I've spent 15, 16 years now trying to decarbonize both personally and businesses and consumers around me. And one of the things that's sort of riled me during that time is carbon offsets. So my view is that in the majority of cases, carbon offsets do not add material value. So they don't help us decarbonize. They're missold to organizations, and they're just another form of greenwashing, which has become pretty insidious in the industry as a whole. And you know, it really derails the ambition to get to net zero. And the reason I say that is, you know, when you make decarbonization decisions, there is a stack of choices you should make first. And we spoke earlier around, you know, using less, then using renewable power, then transitioning to smarter ways of doing things, new fuels and all sorts of good things. Carbon offsets really should be an absolute last resort, and then they should only be a temporary resort as well. And full disclosure, at Good Energy, we have to use some carbon offsets for our gas. So our gas is 10% green gas, and the other 90% has to be, we have to use carbon offsets. And that's because there isn't enough green gas in the UK at the moment to be 100% green gas at a supplier of our size. But the carbon offsets we use, we make sure that they align to the UN Sustainable Development Goals, that they're sort of gold standard, and we know exactly what projects they're being used for. And every pound we invest in a carbon offset goes towards helping create more green gas. So we can see the projects that we do helps put more green gas on the grid. So there's a very clear link there. Okay. But actually also with carbon offsets, you have to say, well, how do we get off them? This isn't a long-term solution. So what is the long-term solution? And at Good Energy, that's why we're spending millions of pounds on heat pumps, because we're saying, right, if we can't decarbonize our gas fully, we have to get people off gas completely. You have to switch heating over to electricity, which we can decarbonize. So that moves us off those carbon offsets in the medium term as well. So it's a short-term thing for a small part of our portfolio that otherwise couldn't be decarbonized. But a lot of organizations jump to that as the first step. So EasyJet, for example, they just bought carbon offsets for all of their fuel emissions. And those carbon offsets, they bought the cheapest ones they possibly could, and which, you know, on reflection, probably had very little to zero impact on actual carbon sequestration and helping against climate change, which is probably one of the reasons why they then moved away from that approach.
Yeah, I interesting. I would love to get just can you just put a little bit of context when you say a carbon offset, right? So like what is that?
So a carbon offset is effectively finding a project somewhere else that can store the carbon that you're unable to offset. So if you are if you're in the aviation industry and you want to offset one ton of carbon from your emissions of your aeroplane, you could find a forest in somewhere in Central Africa, and you can say, right, well, this forest has stored a ton of carbon. And then what you'd effectively get is a carbon certificate that said one ton was sequestered over here, and therefore I can use that to offset my emissions over here in the UK or wherever that aeroplane was flying.
Mm. And for Good Energy, you say you do invest in some carbon offsets only where you have to. What are those carbon offsets that you are sort of hitching your wagon to and saying, these carbon offsets, yeah, these are good enough?
So the important thing is due diligence, first of all, and making sure you're paying a price that feels sensible. So if you're paying, you know, pennies for a ton of carbon offset, it feels like that's not practically able to work. So it doesn't pass the sniff test. But so am I paying a reasonable amount for these as part of the due diligence process? Also being able to see what they're doing. So an example of one of the projects we're working on, and we only do three or four projects, bigger projects where we can actually see the output. You can see photos of and evidence of what's happening. So one of the projects is in India, where typically villagers will cook on open fires. So they'll chop down trees and they'll cook on firewood, which isn't great having firewood inside your house anyway. It's, you know, burning wood, bad for lungs. You're chopping down trees, which isn't great either. And of course, you're then releasing that carbon dioxide into the air. So generally, that sort of cooking style isn't great all round. And so what we've done is our carbon offsets go towards investing in creating biomethane cooking stoves. So these local villages, they will have cattle. Cattle will be creating manure. The manure then creates biogas, which goes into these cooking stoves. So you're creating that green gas from the money that we invest. So you can see the end-to-end process of the investment, green gas going on the grid, and then all the other great benefits as well around the household, you know, lifestyles within those communities.
Yeah, I think it's a really good example of kind of actually being able to see the carbon impact end-to-end. You can say, yeah, this is genuinely reducing the carbon emissions, and it kind of ticks the box. There we go. One carbon emission agreed. Okay, well, brilliant. So Tom, thank you for coming on today. You've been a fantastic guest. You've talked us through everything to do with the Rego space, as well as kind of how supply and behind the meter generation is starting to decarbonize our supply. Everyone who's listened to this and thought, oh, that's a great episode, would love to hear more, do hit like and subscribe on these so other people can find us, as well as staying tuned for the next episode. Tom, you've been a fantastic guest. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure.